In terms of the things that I thought came out from this morning on reflections from yesterday, I thought where we ended was very important. This is only the second time we have met. And if we are to continue, then there needs to be something to support what we are doing between meetings, as well as what we do at the meetings. And although this can be termed bureaucracy or administration, it's vitally important that support is there. So I thought that was a really good point, which I think the Argentinian delegation made, about how do we support this. And I think I know that David has already talked about how we might do that, particularly perhaps with the academic institutions that are working in the UK, but probably that's for discussion afterwards. If we followed that line just for a second about how do we support between meetings, the second thing I thought was how do we develop some working groups on the themes that I will try and bring out that I thought were addressed in the sessions that we've had, and whether or not those working groups could work by video conference at times as opposed to perhaps meeting. There are great benefits in meeting as people. We establish relationships, we ask questions, and we learn a lot. But I wondered how video conferencing might help us between the international meetings for our working groups. And I was particularly caught by that thought that Fiona mentioned about having a day a year when we got the countries involved, perhaps through the embassies, to think about this issue. Because we all know that there are many campaigns each year that the press pick up on, but I think it's a good way of getting a simple message over. And if we were able to rally around a day or date or a series of dates, that would be a good way, not only for the meetings, but thinking of how we can get that message over year after year. In terms of the themes, there are two big ones, aren't there, that we've talked about. Number one is that we have the separation between victims and offenders. There's an obvious link. We have to think about how we deal with them separately. In terms of the victims, one of the things it seemed to me that came out very powerfully was, in general, how do we publicly communicate about this issue? Have we got a simple message that the victims hear when they turn their radios, their TV on, they read their newspapers? What is our simple message to victims? So one of the things that came out from the discussions was sometimes they are unaware that they are victims. They become so downtrodden that they begin to think it's their life and that that's just what it will be like, and perhaps feel guilty and judge themselves more harshly than others will judge them. But somehow there has to be that message got over that this is not acceptable for anybody, this type of behaviour. So that needs to be within the messages that is consistent for all of us, whether it be a law enforcement agency, governments, church. How do we get that simple message over to victims that they are not judged, but they can be helped? The second thing that's come out regularly is about how, when we're discussing trafficking, it can get confused with asylum, mass migration, illegal migration. Of course, these are all factors, but this is not the point that we've had these two conferences about. This is about human trafficking. And I think we have to try to say in our messages every time, this is about human trafficking. Let's not confuse it with illegal migration, with asylum seeking. They are important issues, but this is not what this is about. And thirdly, I thought what came out powerfully from yesterday was in the messaging is how we can build young people into this so that they understand that, in fact, it's not acceptable, and that as they grow to adulthood, or as they may be vulnerable for the ages of perhaps 15 onwards or whatever age we would choose, that they understand that if these types of proposals are put to them, what, as the cardinal from Nigeria mentioned, may seem an attractive proposition, will eventually be an awful life. But that has to be explained. We've all been in a position of being at 14, 15 and 16 and come to the wrong conclusion about similar facts. There's no reason that people should be in a different position as they grow up. So I think we have to be clear how we get those messages over. The second thing I think that's come forward is that if you look at what the Catholic Church has done in the UK with Bakita House, that seems to me to be, first of all, it's an incredible investment. I suppose the challenge is for all of us, how many Bakita Houses are there around so that when someone's identified, there is a place to go where the right skills are available. And it may be a staging post for people, and it could be a long staging post, but who's there to actually provide that help? Or do they have to just fit into something else when they have peculiar needs, needs for their particular issues? So I thought that's something that we all could reflect on. The third thing I thought that came out of our session around enforcement yesterday was about, particularly for victims of sexual slavery, are we using the right hubs to communicate with them? Of course we can use the mass media, but some of the victims I've spoken to did not have access to mass media. They were actively denied access to the mass media. Now, they may have seen it in passing, but certainly weren't regularly having that opportunity. And yet we know that victims of sexual slavery will generally look for health, advice and care because of what they're involved in. Frankly, the people who are abusing them require it for their business. So are we actually communicating through those hubs so that when they seek that medical advice, that those medical practitioners are considering, are they a victim and are they giving them advice about how to give help and asking the question, can I help? Is there anything that we can put you in touch with? I thought that would be really important because I'm going to come back to who's not at the conference and who might be here next time. I thought the fourth thing that came out, this was true of victims and offenders, is about how we can involve the academic world in reducing rigour and partnership. One of the great benefits of the academic world is that they have time to reflect, to think through, and to draw out profound conclusions. We've already got a partnership here. But I think if we can involve academics to build research, to work out what is important or what is less important, and basically establish facts, because otherwise we survive by anecdotes. And anecdotes are always powerful, but to pull together a series of facts will be influential to policymakers, the public, and all the people we are trying to influence about this issue. So I thought an infrastructure which involved some academic input was vital, and it may be a link over to the administration that needs to support. I thought the thing that came out finally this morning, particularly around victims, but it could be around suspects, was around the importance and the creativity and energy that IT can give us. That, you know, that the internet is a great challenge. It can produce some horrible things, but it can also be a great enabler, whether it be an app or it be the internet. What can we use intelligently? And who's out there who can help in this work? And certainly, I thought there were two or three things that we mentioned which sounded really exciting opportunities to actually reduce a very big problem to quite a smart, tightly focused forensic issue. In terms of the offenders, I thought what's come out time after time is follow the cash. Easy to say, but often people are moving large amounts of cash across international borders, and it usually is a cash-based business. It occasionally goes through the banks, of course. And that's where the SARs work, the referrals come from the financial institution is important. But how do we collectively follow the cash, particularly when it's transferring between jurisdictions? The second thing that's come out an awful lot is how do we use intelligence? We all, as agencies, want to be intelligence-led. We all argue that we are intelligence-led, and of course that has to be true. We have to focus limited resources in the areas where we can achieve most effect. But I think it's also true that we know where the problems are at times. So why don't we swamp some of these areas, whether it be the sex trade, whether it be labour slavery, and actually make sure that we do something about it. And not all the agencies charged with those responsibilities have the resources to do it. So in the UK we have a gangmaster licensing group, but it's not, doesn't have thousands of people. But the police do, and it's not that something we could do every day, but perhaps we could work together on themed times regularly and say, right, we're going to go right through this industry and we're looking today for trafficking. Now, that's something the UK could think about, but if we were to do it internationally, it could have a real effect. You can't do it all the time, but you can put prevention and detection, deterrence, in there, should we be minded to do that. So let's, yes, use intelligence, but where we know the problem is, then why don't we just confront it directly, regularly? Another point that came out, certainly in the enforcement group yesterday around offenders, was could we encourage good businesses to support in some way, perhaps financial, law enforcement and other agencies in challenging bad business who are making profit from ignoring regulations and suppressing by slavery people. So these people aren't paying tax, they aren't paying wages, they're a very cheap business for the customer. But equally, good business might want to challenge that because they will lose in areas in which they want to compete. It is not a level playing field. So how could we use good business to help law enforcement and the state challenge bad business? And then finally, going back to the point I made earlier, which is around, again, the IT, internet and apps, how can that catch offenders as well as identify victims? And the very final thing for me in this area was about training. I thought what came out time and again was about training for first responders, law enforcement, of course, health perhaps, education. What, you know, how do we establish the symptoms of a person who's been trafficked so that people can see them? And sometimes we think these things are complex, but I don't think they always are. Certainly I'm aware that, to give an example, at Victoria Coach Station, people who work there notice when people arrive who are suspicious. They notice the person, the coach driver, who gets off the coach and hands a package to someone else. They notice when four or five people who are asked for their passports, one person offers the passports and four people don't have them. It's about control and it's about a business. Now, there are things out there that we know, but we need to share to make sure that first responders are aware. So I thought that was another profound point that we've got to think about. And then finally, only to mention, in terms of people who weren't here, but we ought to perhaps consider, I thought there were four groups that came up. Number one is prosecutors. Yeah, how do they play a part in this process? Because, of course, the best of cases have to be taken through the courts in all our countries. So how can they work in partnership? The second was health, for the reasons I've already described. How can they play a part in helping? Thirdly, we've got some, but not all, academics. Fourthly, perhaps, and I think this came out from the American or America's delegation, how we are unable to build politicians and policymakers into this process in a consistent way. And it could be through, as we heard from the embassies, the diplomatic corps. It's not easy to get politicians to this type of international event all the time, and it can be a different sort of event if we're not careful. But I think equally, I think the diplomatic corps is a great way into the infrastructure and the political and policy levels of other countries. So I thought there was a great deal of hope in only our second meeting. I think we've identified some common themes and some common work. The task now, if the last challenge was to make sure we came back into the room, we passed that challenge. The third challenge will be to what we're going to do with the things that we have learned. So I hope that captures something of what we talked about over the last 24 hours.